never pre-recorded, with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded, with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded, with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. Live and direct, we come and never pre-recorded, with information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream, media distorted. We come and listen and support it. 6 foot six above sea level.
BBC News with Sue Montgomery. A new global economic forecast has predicted that the trade wars unleashed by Donald Trump will hit growth and raise inflation around the world. The OECD's chief economist, Alvaro Pereira, told the BBC the organisation was cutting growth forecasts for almost all major economies.
So we re-estimated now new forecasts for the world economy, and we downgraded almost every single country that we had before. So right now we expect that the world economy will grow about 3% next year and 3.1% this year. And most of the economies, including the United States, Europe, and most of Asia, was downgraded because of this trade uncertainty, in particular the impact of trade restrictions that brings less growth and more inflation.
Canada's new Prime Minister Mark Carney has been welcomed by King Charles at Buckingham Palace as part of his first trip abroad since taking office. Earlier, he had lunch with President Macron in Paris, where he said he wanted to strengthen ties with what he called reliable allies. Here's Lise Doucette.
Reliable allies. That's what Canada's new Prime Minister is emphasising. That phrase was also used by France's President Emmanuel Macron at the start of Mark Carney's visit. Neither mentioned Donald Trump by name, but the US president's imposition of heavy tariffs, as well as his repeated threats to take over Canada and make it the 51st state, hangs over this trip. For Canada, it's not just a trade war, it's a threat to its sovereignty. That's why Mr. Carney made Paris and London his first foreign visit, to emphasise Canada's strong ties with its former colonial powers.
Rwanda has severed all diplomatic ties with Belgium in a deepening row over Kigali's backing for M23 rebels in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Belgium said it regretted Rwanda's decision. It's announced retaliatory action. The Rwandan president has accused Brussels of using lies and manipulation to mobilise the world against it. Lebanon's president has warned that his country will respond to cross-border fire from Syria that's killed a child and wounded six people. On Sunday, Syrian troops exchanged fire with Lebanese soldiers and armed groups. Hugo Beshega is in Beirut.
Tensions along the border have been on the rise since Islamist-led rebels in Syria toppled the Assad regime, which was an ally of Iran and the Lebanese armed group Hezbollah. The deadliest incident yet happened on Sunday, when three Syrian soldiers were killed, apparently in Lebanon, in circumstances still not clear. The authorities in Damascus accuse Hezbollah, which has denied involvement. The Syrian army shelled communities in Lebanon, and at least one child was killed. Both Lebanon and Syria have sent reinforcements to the border, and the Lebanese president has ordered the army to respond to fire coming from Syria.
BBC News. President Trump has warned Iran that it will face dire consequences for any further attacks by Yemen's Houthis. He said from now on, the Iranian leadership would be viewed as having pulled the trigger for every shot fired by the group, which has long been backed by Tehran. The White House Press Secretary, Caroline Levitt, read part of Mr. Trump's statement.
Let nobody be fooled. The hundreds of attacks being made by Houthi, the sinister mobsters and thugs based in Yemen, are all created by Iran. Any further attack or retaliation by the Houthis will be met with great force, and there is no guarantee that the force will stop there. Iran has played the innocent victim of rogue terrorists from which they've lost control, but they haven't lost control. They are dictating every move.
Mr. Trump's threat followed a Houthi claim to have attacked a U.S. aircraft carrier in the Red Sea in response to U.S. strikes in Yemen, in which dozens of people were killed. Tens of thousands of demonstrators have protested in the Yemeni capital Sana'a against Saturday's deadly U.S. airstrikes. Waving assault rifles, daggers and Korans, many chanted death to America. Similar protests took place in several other Yemeni cities. A court in Belarus has sentenced a Japanese man to 7 years in prison for spying. Nakanishi Masatoshi was detained last July, though his arrest was only announced in September. The prosecutor's office in Belarus said the court had convicted him of cooperating with the security and intelligence agency of a foreign state. One of Hong Kong's richest men, the property tycoon Li Shaoqi, has died at the age of 97. His fortune was estimated to be $30 billion. Mr. Li was born in the southern Chinese province of Guangdong into a family that owned gold and silver shops. He moved to Hong Kong when he was 20, getting involved in real estate. BBC News.
Do you care about workers and labor issues? Do you want to make a difference in our community for working people? Then join the Labor Radio team. Labor Radio is a weekly show that covers labor, social justice, and political issues that impact workers. And we need your help. As a Labor Radio volunteer, you will have the opportunity to report on important labor and social justice stories in your community, interview workers, activists, and experts, produce and edit your own stories. No prior experience is necessary, though a connection with labor is a plus. We will provide training and support. All you need is a passion for worker justice and a desire to amplify the voices of working people. To learn more, contact Volunteer Coordinator Adrian Rainey at 608-321-9583 or head online to wortfm.org/volunteer to fill out an application. Labor Radio, a voice for workers.
Welcome to Madison Bookbeat. This is your regular Monday at 1 o'clock show to get into books. And that's exactly what we're going to do today. It's not a book, which is what we usually do in terms of speaking to an author, but we're going to talk about books in Madison. And we're going to talk about it with Tana Elias, who's the director of Madison Public Library. So she knows about all the books in Madison, I understand. Every single one. She has to read it before it gets shelved. So, not really. Tana is pretty new to the job. She was hired by the MPL board and the city less than a year ago, but she's not new to Madison Public Library. So, Tana, how's the job?
The job is great. As you said, I've actually been at Madison Public Library for over 30 years. So I've done a lot of different jobs within the library system. And this is just kind of feels like a continuation of that. I've been through a whole budget cycle. I've been through almost a whole year. So I feel like I'm settling in.
Mm-hmm. Great. And I guess the budget thing is sort of the trial by fire, but you passed through that one in pretty good shape, I understand. And how are the libraries supported? Some of it is it's a peculiar institution in the city, and that it's not entirely funded by the city.
Right, the majority of our funding does come from a city levy, and then we also have the support of the Madison Public Library Foundation, and we work with the South Central Library System, and so there is a kind of complicated formula of giving money to libraries within the system and getting library money from libraries in the system. So we're part of two systems, actually, Dane County Library System and South Central Library System. And so we get some funding from each of those. And then we also have to give some funding to other libraries whose, if our patrons, Madison patrons, use other libraries in Dane County, there's this very complicated formula where we all share money back and forth.
I'm sure it's pretty Byzantine. Now, I have a library, and I think most people who use the library system have one library that they go to, and the rest of the system has become sort of invisible to to us. I know that there's the Central Library and sort of know where they are, but, you know, I live a few blocks from Pinney Library, and I'm among the most regular visitors to it. But to give people a sense of what else is out there, that there are other libraries, how big a system it is, and who it serves, can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so Madison Public Library has 9 libraries in the city of Madison. We also operate the Dream Bus, which is a mobile bus that takes library service to about 12 to 14 sites each week. And then we are in the process of just starting to build the Imagination Center at Rheindahl Park, which will be a 10th library. And those libraries exist within the larger system of Dane County libraries. There are 28 libraries in Dane County, including Madison libraries. And then there are 54, I believe, libraries in the South Central Library System, which is a 7-county area.
Mm-hmm. And now with, you mentioned the Imagination Center, which has an unusual name for a library. Usually they're defined by, sometimes by where they are, but sometimes not. So could you tell us a bit about that and what that's about, why it's an Imagination Center?
Yeah, originally it was conceived as both an Imagination Center, which would be a library. It will be a park pavilion, indoor park pavilion. There was some thought that there might be other city agencies there as well. Right now, it looks like a library and a park pavilion in a co-located facility. It's at the corner of Rheindahl Park on the city's northeast side. So we'll be serving customers who don't have a library very close by and a really fast-growing area of the city.
And that area was sort of the most densely populated that did not have any library service really to speak of.
That's correct.
Up to this point. So, and I was sort of involved with it when I was on the city council, and I remember one presentation by an employee of the library saying that it had the most children per household. It was the most densely populated area with children in the city that also happened to be unserved. And there are many Latinos and other immigrant groups that are within that area as well.
That's right. Yeah, and it's an area of the city that not only doesn't have library service, it doesn't have a lot of other city services as well. So it doesn't have a lot of nonprofit agencies in that area, doesn't have other city agencies there, doesn't have, you know, other, there are certainly parks in that area, but not really good park shelters or like an indoor pavilion that will be coming to this building. So really, library serve as connectors to multiple city agencies. We give out bus passes. We serve as voting locations. So this is a service that is really needed and will extend city services throughout that neighborhood.
Let me get into that, that being the other things that the library does. That was certainly one of the things that I wanted to touch on, is that everything goes back to sort of my memory of as a child, and that, you know, the library that I went to in Brooklyn, New York, it did one thing: it lent out books, and that's the only thing that it did. And I didn't expect it or wanted to do anything more than that as a 5-year-old. I just wanted books, and that's the only thing that it did. And you had to maintain silence while you were there. And that's not the case. That's not the library that I use anymore.
Right. Pinney has a huge play area, so very different.
Yeah. It has a play area where the first thing you see when you come in is, a lot of things you see because it's such an open space. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you see on the left a incredible arts and crafts area, arts and crafts room with very colorful and kids stuff is all over. And then as you go into the main area is a display table with seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And why does the library give out seeds?
Well, what we find, let's take a step back from the seeds. And I think what we have found over time in pretty much my whole career in libraries, and again, that's 30 some years, internet changed libraries. incontrovertibly, like it really just had a huge impact on what library service looks like. So when we used to be a location that, or a service that just offered materials, and you had to interact with them, you know, quietly, you were learning, you were reading quietly to yourself. We found over time that learning is much more interactive, and we've also found that a lot of the resources that you used to have to come to a library to look at in person, a print or a physical item, many of those things are now online. And so what we've seen throughout my career in public libraries in the last 25 plus years is that libraries have become social spaces. They're often referred to as the third place. So you have home, you have work, and you have like public spaces like a library. And that is a place where you can come and connect with the internet, you can connect with others, you can connect with the materials that we have, you can check those materials out, you can connect with those materials online. And there's really been much more of a focus of connecting people to services, to programs, to other experiences in libraries. And so you've seen that shift from kind of quiet reading activity only to multi-purpose.
We have music on Saturday mornings.
Right. There's music, play spaces. Mm-hmm. You know, kids learn by doing things. And so we have interactive spaces where children can learn not only by sitting down and reading a book quietly with a caregiver, but they can learn by playing with each other, mm-hmm. interacting with each other.
We have tutors at the library. One of the things, again, getting back to my, you know, community-based career, is that there's no place to meet in Madison.
Right.
You know, and in my district, which was included the Pinney Park area, I mean, I would get on the phone and, you know, beg churches to give me a room here and there. And most were gracious enough to lend it to me, but there really was no place to meet. And one of the, you know, real benefits of having Pinney Library is that there are multiple places and multiple sites. Let's just jog back to what is MPL? What is the Madison Public Library? How many, does it really reach most of the people in Madison, you think?
Well, we know that we have about 42% of Madisonians have a library card. But that, keeping that in mind, you don't need a library card to use the library. You can come to the library. You can read in the library. We know that many people come and read newspapers every day, and some of them don't have library cards, or they come and use the computer and they get a guest pass, so they also don't have a library card for one reason or another. Or they come to an event and we don't track you know, who mm-hmm. comes to our events for the most mm-hmm. part. But we know that many people do use libraries. They use them weekly. Some people use them daily. And so it is a city service that touches many people across the city.
Mm-hmm. And I like numbers, okay? how many books did we take out this year?
So we checked out 2.23 million items, physical items. So that's books, DVDs, CDs, et cetera. And then we checked out an additional 777,000 online items. So that's a big change from the library that you remember, mm-hmm. where 25% of our circulation happens without anyone ever having to come into a library and touch a physical item. They turn on their phone, they get a notice that the book that they've been waiting for on the Libby platform is available. They click a button, it's suddenly on their phone or their tablet or their computer. And then after the 2 or 3 week checkout period, it just automatically goes away.
Yeah. So, talk a bit about the Libby system. It's something that I've tried to use. It was unavailable because the books that I wanted were unavailable. Mm-hmm. Could you describe a bit about that? I think it may be invisible to some people.
Yeah. Well, we definitely know that more and more people mm-hmm. are using it. But it is an online platform provided by a commercial company called Overdrive. It is a statewide consortium. So we work with other public libraries throughout the state to have a collective buying pool. And then that collection is available to anybody with a public library card in the state of Wisconsin. And so it's you can check things out online. It's ebooks, it's audiobooks, it's magazines. And we have a very large collection. Even so, many people say, like, we don't have enough items in that collection because they're used to being able to purchase something on Amazon and it shows up 2 days later, or if it's a Kindle item, it shows up immediately.
Right. And so if there's, you know, so to speak, a bestseller or something that's a very popular book, you have you often require to wait for
often
a long period.
We try to buy as many copies as we can, but we have to balance that with obviously our budget constraints and sure, all the different formats that we need to purchase something in. When there's a bestseller, for example, you buy a print copy, you might buy a large print copy, you would buy an audiobook copy on CD, you would also buy an audiobook copy and an ebook copy on Overdrive. And so, you know, multiple people like different kinds of formats, and so you have to kind of purchase them as widely as you can.
Right. That's I'm not going to get into the whole book purchasing and how do you choose.
It's a conversation on its own.
Yeah, how do you choose books and so on. I'm sure it's complicated, and especially when you're buying six or seven different versions of the same thing. One of the things that I am always impressed with and I think is a very valuable part of the library system. I used to go by Penny every morning to use, right outside the library, are these rent-a-bike...
B-cycle?
B-cycle, yes. Mm-hmm. So I used to be a B-cycle member, and when I would go to work late and I would pick up a B-cycle, there would be people waiting to get into the library in the morning, and invariably, those people were there to get on the computer,
mm-hmm,
and I always note that as such a key resource, because there really is no other place in society, in our community, where people have that capacity. People who, like myself, my family, everybody has one. Everybody has multiple email accounts and internet accounts and so on. And there's a good percentage of our community that isn't wired in.
That's right.
And the only place where they can say their magic words is the library. Can you talk a bit about what that is for the library, how many people use it, and how you perceive it it's sort of a main function of the library, as you're saying, that's pre-internet, simply didn't exist.
Right. So I think one key point to make is that a large percentage of the information available to us now is available only online. So when you think of government information, when you think of applying for jobs, when you think of forms that you need to fill out, all of these things, when you do your taxes, all of those things happen online now. And so for those who don't have access to computers or don't have access to print things out that they need to take into a job interview, for example, this is a crucial service. And it's an information adjacent service, I would say, because there is so much information that's really only available online now. So when we introduced public internet in computers about 25 years, public internet in libraries about 25 years ago, what we saw were years of teaching classes, basic classes for computer literacy. And now what we see is additional, fewer and fewer people need those very basic computer skills, but many of them still do. And now what they really need more assistance with is maybe they have access on their phone, but they don't have the ability to fill out a complicated form on their phone, or they need to print something off. One example is that we are adjacent to the new Department of Motor Vehicles at the Goodman South Madison Library on the city's southwest side. And if you go to the DMV and you don't have your physical license and you need to print something off, you can't do that on your phone. So you have to go across the parking lot to the public library.
And you can't do it at the DMV.
You can't do it at the DMV either, right. So you walk across the parking lot, print it out at the library, connect to the library's computers, pay your 10 cents for your copy, and then walk it back over to the DMV. So many things like that throughout the day where we're helping people apply for jobs that they can't do on their phone, or maybe they don't have phones either.
Right.
So it's a really crucial service now. Mm-hmm. that libraries throughout the nation offer.
Right. I mean, for people who have no phones, which is expensive to maintain a, you know, a phone connection as mm-hmm. well, and to just, you know, feel like, gee, I'm not part of Facebook, and Facebook is
right
sort of the community that they want to belong to. I want to contact my grandmother or something, mm-hmm. or grandchild,
or your health information.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
if you use MyChart or something similar, like your health portal is online, your employment portal might be online, you might file your timesheet online. Like, so many things that we do mm-hmm. In society now are online, and if you don't have that access, you're really locked out of many different important functions.
Yeah, it's probably a fairly small percentage, but it's always there. I mean, mm-hmm. every time I go to Penny, I mean, most of the computer stations are full.
Right.
And people seem to be doing business.
They do, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
140,000 sessions last year, and that's on our wired computers. So we also offer free Wi-Fi throughout the library, and we see many people bringing their own device in to connect with our high-speed internet.
See. Yeah. Well, for those of you just joining us, this is David Ahrens. I'm with Madison Bookbeat, and today I'm talking to Tana Elias, who's the director of the Madison Public Library. So Bookbeat today is about books and really what the primary resource for books are in the city, which is the Madison Public Library. Question.
Yes.
How many books are there in the Madison Public Library?
It's about 890,000-ish, a little less than a million.
This morning it was about 890.
I mean, on any given day.
That's a lot of books.
It is a lot of books. Yeah. And those, again, are the, you know, the print items or the physical items.
Yeah, yeah. So we talked a bit about the sort of the internet, you know, the use of computers and Libby, and of course we've had audiobooks. What else do you think is coming down the pike now for libraries in terms of technological change? Or,
well, I think technology is always changing, and so we always, you know, look to what do we want to adapt and what do we not want to adapt. I think one of the conversations that's starting to happen in the library profession is, what do we do about AI? We can serve as a location that can educate people about AI-generated information. We can educate people about misinformation. We can educate people on how to use tools like ChatGPT that are kind of commercially available to people. And so that's a technological change that I think all libraries are kind of thinking about how we deal with and what's the best way to introduce it. But I would say one of the biggest changes coming to libraries is really more of an emphasis on social connection. What we're hearing in the last few years, especially since COVID, is people are having a hard time connecting. There's a lot of polarization in society. You don't have as many opportunities to meet people who are different from you. And there are just a lot of people, from young people to elderly people, who are lonely and disconnected from others. And I think that's one of the key things that's really coming to libraries in the next few years, and already happening in libraries, is that opportunity to connect with others.
Yes, it's certainly happening now. And again, it's for people who are not, church connected in any way. I mean, one of the things that's I see in my library news and through Penny and the library website is, you know, boy, do kids want to play games who are games for 6 to 11, games for 11 to 12, games for adults 21 to 121, mm-hmm. Or sewing, or my wife went to packing seeds.
Seeds, right.
And I thought, wow, that's really clever. I mean, I saw it as, this is a social interaction thing. It's not a seed thing. And that this is just a way of getting eight people in a room together for 2 hours and chatting, you know, probably. And
it's both.
It's both.
Yeah.
Of course, you then give out the seeds. You don't just throw them away. But I thought it's really a, it's kind of a backhanded way to get people together, to sort of break the ice.
Right. We have a series of programs that are focused, I would say, on both the social interaction, but also in learning from each other. You know, what we find is fewer people know how to plant a garden and what seeds are compatible with others and how do you mulch it and how do you help it grow. And fewer people know how to sew and repair their own things. So we had this wonderful program last year called Care and Repair. And we focused on learning from community experts about how to sow things, how to put gardens together and plan what seeds go next to which seeds and all of these different things where you might not know how to do these things anymore. You know, generations ago, you might have learned from your mother or your grandmother, and we've kind of lost some of these skills. So many different ways to connect with people and to share information and to learn from each other. And that's really something that our library is focused on in the last few years, but we're seeing that happen in many public libraries.
Have you had cooking?
We do have some cooking. Yeah. So the Meadow Ridge Library has a commercial kitchen, and we do cooking classes there. And we've also had a series of cooking classes at the Lakeview Library.
Yeah, I mean, the Penny, and I'm sure other libraries, have certain hours of the weekday mornings where they serve coffee.
Right, you know, every Tuesday morning.
The Friends of Penny Library, and it really becomes a social thing. In a way, it is sort of the opposite of the library of my youth.
The quiet library.
The quiet,
right?
Isolated, don't look at me, don't come sit next to me, don't make a noise. And here we're sort of going really in the opposite direction.
Right. But that's still learning. You know, whether you're reading something from a book and you're having that individual experience, or you're interacting with someone in a program, you're still learning. It's just a different form.
Yeah. And what, in terms of are there limits? What do you think are the limits to this?
I think in the library profession, we're kind of grown up to understand that the limits are you can provide some information, but you can't provide, provide information, for example, but not advice, if that makes sense. So for example, we help people every day with medical questions. We can point them to resources. We look and make sure that those resources are well vetted, and we might find a variety of different resources on a particular health topic, but we can't tell them what to do, right? So I think that line is providing advice versus information. We help people find resources and think about them critically, but we don't tell them, you know, do this or the outcome. And so I think that's one of those lines. The other line that I think is kind of pushing libraries more is we really do serve a lot of folks who don't have other resources. So folks who've kind of fallen through the safety net, folks who need additional help, either finding basic services like food or housing or healthcare. And we connect them with other resources in the community. We connect them with social workers or nonprofits who can help them find housing or help them find food or help them find a job. But we don't have the capacity or in some cases the knowledge to do that ourselves.
Yeah.
So there's
sort of bring those people in as part of the library umbrella. When we, meaning myself and other city council members and some folks in the community, were first thinking about the Imagination Center, it was sort of this umbrella notion where there would be a place for a police officer, a neighborhood police officer there, and a job service person, and so on and so on and so forth. I mean, we didn't really have a very concrete idea of how all those pieces would get put together, but that sort of was the notion, as it would be the library as the centerpiece, and then this constellation of other things that happen around it. But we never had any real agreement or discussion with those other agencies about that.
Well, and I think what happens is people don't need that all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Most other agencies that we talked to in those early stages, like they might be able to provide so many hours a week, but they didn't need dedicated space. And so we didn't want that space to be wasted when mm-hmm. no one else was there. And right. So what most of our public libraries do now is we'll offer office hours, or we'll open up a study room for a nonprofit to work with clients for 2 or 3 or 4 hours a day or a week. So we, for example, have tax assistance at many of our libraries right now, and that happens through April. But you don't need that in May. You don't need that in June. And so rather than having dedicated space for one function, libraries serve as kind of rotating, you know, we have people kind of rotating in and out, providing different services at different times of the day, different days of the week, different times of the year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if Penny still has it, but many libraries had coffee with a cop.
We do still have at some libraries. I'm not sure about Penny.
Yeah, right. So that would be like for 2 hours every...
Right, and alders have listening sessions, right, and other elected officials have listening sessions. We have office hours with various social service agencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have food pantries in some of our libraries.
Oh, there are food pantries?
Yeah, small, mini food pantries.
Oh. Yeah, I thought whether that crossed the line in terms of the direct provision of service, the libraries sort of go up to that in terms of directing people to these things, mm-hmm. but you know, it doesn't give out food, it doesn't provide clothes, it doesn't, you know.
Well, I think where we're drawing the line for ourselves currently is we don't run those services. So we might connect, we might be the space where people interact with them. Mm-hmm. We're never probably going to have a full-on food pantry, but we've been trying mini food pantries through a partnership with River Food Pantry. And then they also have the mobile munch van that comes to a couple of different library locations.
And what's that?
It's a mobile van that gives out lunch.
Lunch van.
It's mobile munch with an M, but they give out food resources. So it travels rather than individuals having to go to a specific location.
We don't
find that food. We don't organize it. We're connecting with other services that offer that in our space versus organizing it ourselves. B-Cycle that you mentioned mm-hmm. earlier is another example. That's a commercial provider. We offer a pass. We don't run the bike lending program ourselves. Other mm-hmm. libraries actually do that. They actually like service and manage a fleet of bicycles.
Oh, really?
We've decided that's like outside of our scope.
Yeah. That's.
And we have B-Cycle as a great partner here in Madison.
Right. Does every library have a bunch of B-Cycles?
Not every library.
Yeah, but a lot.
Quite a few do, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really good mix. What, in terms of getting back to the old library, mm-hmm. The book library, what are some of the sort of the bestseller, or so to speak, the books that are being most highly circulated? What are they these days? Does it mirror the bestseller list, or does Madison have a different angle on this?
For the most part, it mirrors national trends. You know, bestsellers are always going to be popular. I would say there are some slight fluctuations from library to library. We recently had a presentation at one of our library board meetings by the manager of the Goodman South Madison Library, and one of their most checked out titles is the DMV handbook. So that makes sense, right, for that location, the fact that the DMV is right across the parking lot.
Oh, sure.
But for the most part, we follow national trends. You know, whatever you see on the New York Times bestseller list is going to have a wait list in our library as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And does that carry over to... If a book is, Melania is number one on the book list, is that also the same for the audio and all the other different forms that you mentioned?
Typically, it's mm-hmm. it's pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What something that I wondered for years is, what happened to the VHS? Tapes that the library had. I mean, the library at one time, of course, going through all the different permutations of video, had many VHS tapes, and then we went over to DVDs. What did the library do with them?
I believe we went through our usual weeding process where we decided if we were keeping any for archival purposes. And then when we deaccession items, we give them to our library friends groups for sales.
So I
know that the number of VHS players, you know, we look at national stats when we decide to close a collection. We look at current usage stats, and we saw VHS was going down and down and down. Many companies were no longer releasing things on VHS. So even if you wanted to get certain, you know, new releases, they weren't being published on VHS anymore. And so that factored into our decision to stop offering VHS as well. We do have, I think we still do have some. And then the other thing that we slowly got rid of were audiobooks on cassette. So again, I believe we still may have some, but you know, they're not being released anymore. So it's mostly CD or online.
Yeah. And do you think that CDs are going the way of
seems VHS? To be a little slower. But you know, I don't have a crystal ball in terms of what's going to happen in the next 10 years, but we're definitely seeing a decrease in both DVD and CD checkouts. We're seeing we're seeing the same thing happen again, where some things are only released on streaming platforms. Certain TV shows, for example, may not ever be released on DVD. They're only available, and sometimes they're not even for sale. You really just have to subscribe as an individual subscriber to a streaming platform in order to get some of that content. And so over time, we may look at how many publishers are releasing things still in a print format that libraries can have, how many, you know, are only releasing straight to streaming. And then we may make decisions based on kind of how the national trends are going and what's available and what's being used locally.
Interesting. Yeah, I've sort of had that sense looking at just the acquisitions each month that come in to the library, how smaller numbers of CDs and the number that are purchased are smaller numbers. I mean, it's not where every library in the system is buying a new Kendrick Lamar CD. It's three or four.
Right.
Do it, and as opposed to all 50 or 47,
right,
or whatever it was.
Well, and for video, we also have an online streaming service called Canopy, and so that has, you know, we buy maybe a new release comes on Canopy and DVD, so we again have to kind of manage those formats.
Can you talk a bit? Actually, before you talk about it, let me just identify who I am and you are and who people are listening to who's just going through the stations. This is Madison Bookbeat, and you're listening to WORT FM, of course. I'm David Ahrens. I'm a host for Madison Bookbeat, and we're talking today with Tana Elias, who's the director of Madison Public Library. And we're talking about what's happening with the library and books and sort of the reading information world. I guess it goes beyond the reading. Because actually, I wanted to talk a bit about what's Libby. I mean, not Libby, the Canopy, as you mentioned. I've looked at it, but I've never really used it or gotten into it. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. It's similar to a streaming service for video. So, you know, you've heard of Netflix or Hulu. It's very similar. It has a variety of full length releases, some old content, some new content, and then also has a children's section. So a lot of videos for children. So it's really just you can use your library card, you set up a profile, and then you can you get certain number of tickets per month. Because we pay depending on how many people use the platform and how many things they look at. And so in order to be able to manage our costs, we limit the number of things that people can kind of look at or check out via that service each. So it's a little different from Overdrive, which is our audiobook and ebook platform, where it's kind of unlimited, but you might have to wait for a while. You might get the items right away through Canopy, but you might only get so many per month.
And so you do have to wait sometimes on Canopy, or is it just as you want it?
Canopy is as you want it, but you're limited in terms of how many things you can view per month, if that makes sense. Whereas Overdrive, it's very similar to a physical book where there might be 100 holds and you're number 27 in line and you have to wait until it's your turn.
Yeah. And from what I recall, Canopy has thousands of movies.
Yes.
Yeah, does it?
Yeah. Pretty wide variety.
Yeah. And it brings in new movies as they're released?
Yes.
I just sort of think of it as not old movies, but, not current as well. But
right.
I probably wasn't looking for that.
Yeah, it's a mix of newer and older movies. Well, both of those services, I think it's important to note, there are restrictions. Certain publishers won't sell to them. So, there are always going to be gaps in our collection, either because we can't purchase the content as a library platform, or it's too expensive for us to purchase.
Yeah. And let me ask you a self-serving question on that.
Yeah.
Does Criterion put its catalog on
I
that?
Don't know offhand. Oh, yeah, You'd have to ask our selector.
Okay.
She would know for sure.
So I've been looking for one that's unavailable now. So what are people complaining about in the library? Usually if I have somebody here, I want to raise some issues with them about what the, adequacy of the program or program services or different direction that the agency might go to. But I have no beef with the library.
Good. Glad to hear it.
So what do some people complain about?
Yeah, I think that probably the top things that people complain about are, we are always going to be a city agency and it will take us a little time to buy a new release. We do our best. Sometimes we go and we pre-order or we, go to a store and pick things up. But there's always going to be maybe a little more of a wait. And we can only buy so many copies. We've talked already about we have to buy in multiple formats for multiple audiences. We share resources with other libraries. So it's never going to be as fast as you going to the store the day something is released and buying your own copy, and then you get to read it right away. You might be the first person on the list, or you might be the 100th person on the list when a bestseller is released. And so, we're never going to be as fast as Amazon, but we're cheaper than Amazon. Yeah. So it's a trade-off. And, some people, I think, who are used to being able to get what they want when they want it, sometimes get frustrated with the wait. So I would say that's one of our biggest complaints.
Mm-hmm.
The other complaint that we're starting to hear more is that some content isn't available for libraries to purchase. And I don't have any good specific examples off the top of my head, but sometimes a new release won't ever be put on DVD. Like I said, it will only be released straight to streaming. So you can only get it if you get Netflix, for example, or you can only get it if you are an individual subscriber to Hulu.
So Netflix doesn't put its stuff on DVDs necessarily.
Not all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is another complaint, is that people will hear about something that they've seen advertised or they've seen on a platform, and they come to us and they say, why don't you have this? And we say, because we can't purchase it, or we can't make it available through libraries. There are many restrictions from publishers about what we can make available and how we can make it available. And that's why we work with a platform like Overdrive or Canopy, who figures out all of those legal rights based on each individual release agent. And then I would say, the other complaint sometimes we still get is that the library isn't quiet. So kind of going back to what you were saying about how the library used to be a quiet place where people would read, like now children play in the library and they learn maybe by talking to each other. And so as we build or remodel our spaces, we're always trying to balance that quiet space and loud space so that both of them can coexist in the same library.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a sort of tough one to overcome. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes, I mean, I have grandkids that I take to the library, and I mean, I've left them in the playroom while I went to look for books, and if I hear them, I come in and tell them these are inside voices.
Right, right.
It seems like a playground, but it actually is not. These are inside voices, so that's a hard one to sort of get kids used to, mm-hmm. and hopefully they grow out of that outside voice when they move over to the next section. Now, how much you talked a bit about, say in terms of a canopy that you have to limit how much how the level of usage mm-hmm. by individuals because you're paying per. Right. Per usage on this. How does the library allocate that in terms of how much money is spent by the library on acquisitions and of all kinds? I mean, certainly we have a big personnel cost, and having all these properties costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
How much of it is spent on buying stuff?
On buying materials, it's about 1.1 to 1.3 million per year. And that sounds like a lot, but when you think about the price of an average book or a DVD that you might buy, it's really not.
Yeah.
So we really, our selector team makes decisions very carefully. They use a variety of professional reviews and information from usage of, do cookbooks go out a lot in library A, then we'll buy more cookbooks or we'll spend more money on cookbooks for that particular library. But if they don't go out at all at library B, then we'll buy the things, maybe it's children's books are more popular at a different library.
Libraries aren't buying their own books. I mean, like Penny doesn't buy books for
No,
Penny.
We buy for the whole system. We have a team, a centralized team that purchases for the whole system, but they take staff input and they take public input and then they look at usage data and then they also look at reviews and think about their budget and, every day they have to prioritize what to purchase and what format to purchase.
It's really not much.
And we actually are the second lowest per capita spending on library materials, I believe, in the whole state. So we have, the wonderful thing about Madison Libraries is we have invested a lot in wonderful spaces for people to come in and use our materials. But we've really kind of neglected over time how many things we buy and what we're able to offer. And it's hard to balance those two expectations.
Yeah. So we've been on the air for about 45 minutes, and I haven't said the word Trump once.
Okay. And now you have.
So last night, I read that the new target for Trump, or whoever it is that's running the country, is libraries. And it's an institution I had never heard of before, but it's the Institute for Libraries and Museums.
Institute for Museum and Library Services. Right. So the IMLS funds libraries at a national level. In Wisconsin, what that looks like is IMLS, like Madison Public Library, for example, has applied for and received multiple IMLS grants over the last decade. And we have also benefited at the state level because the Department of Public Instruction in Wisconsin has a division for library service, and that is funded almost exclusively with IMLS funds. So they support a wide variety of things from continuing education to underpinning some of the technology that happens in libraries to a wide variety of different consulting services. So IMLS at the federal level supports the state level, which supports the library systems like South Central Library System, which supports the individual libraries like Madison Public Library. So while it won't affect us directly if funds are cut, it will definitely affect the quality of library service in the state and, you know, our ability to be innovative and try new things, because we often don't get to be innovative and try new things with city funds. We get that from a grant where we get to try things and we get to do research and we get to test things out. Mm-hmm. We've had multiple IMLS grants at Madison Public Library, which have really revolutionized either the way we track programs. We were the Bubbler program, which is our arts maker-based program that was, you know, that we started in 2013, was started with an IMLS National Leadership Grant. So, and has become a national model for that kind of interactive, collaborative, hands-on art-making program, making those connections that we talked about earlier. So it's a huge deal for us. I just read about it this weekend as well. It happened late on Friday, is my understanding, and IMLS has 7 days to get back to the administration with, you know, what is statutorily required and what isn't, and then we'll see how that goes. So we're already looking to start an advocacy campaign and educate people about what this means for our library, for libraries in general, and obviously for museums. You know, IMLS grants have funded multiple innovative things that have happened in Madison museums and in museums across the state.
Right. And it may be implicated in the whole DEI terror that's being foisted on the country. So, I mean, which is a lot of what Bubbler and other of the innovations did, was to really broaden the reach of the library to communities that the library wasn't really speaking to. And so I read it on a thing called Every Library.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you tell us a bit about Every Library before we go?
Yeah, it's a national group. You can just Google Every Library and find out more information. I know that they've already released a campaign encouraging people to reach out to their elected officials. We'll be releasing something similar, working either with Every Library and the American Library Association. So watch the Madison Public Library website for a little more information on that in the coming week. If you're an email newsletter subscriber or a social media follower of our library, we'll have more information to share with you as well. It's an important thing. And, you know, I think it's happening to libraries, it's happening to museums, it's happening to arts institutions. It's really far-reaching. Colleges,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, this is all part
K-12,
of, right? Yeah, this is all part of the same, you know, attack on thought.
Right.
You know, and to regulate it, I could just imagine some congressional hearing on library funding where, you know, this book and that book and this book and that book. And,
well, and, you know, I think it feels new, but it's not new, really. You know, we've lived through the McCarthy era, for example. And so Madison Public Library is celebrating its 150th anniversary this year. And we've seen these changes throughout history. And so it's really important to use your voice and, you know, share with your elected officials what matters to you and make your voice heard.
Are you going to have a birthday party?
We are going to have three birthday parties. Right. So,
am I invited?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Everyone in the community is invited. So we're having parties at all nine of our libraries on May 10, May 17, and May 31st. May 31st is the actual anniversary date. We'll have lots of parties. We have an interactive history of the Madison Public Library, which is really a microcosm of the history of Madison.
Sure.
We have that on our website, and lots of hope for the next 150 years.
Yeah. I mean, also this will be, well, I guess the Madison Book Festival is, Wisconsin Book Festival is going on sort of simultaneous to that. But this is certainly a big added thing, and it'll give Madisonians an opportunity to show their love, right?
Yes.
Bring presents or small bills and big envelopes.
Well, the foundation will have its own campaign. But, you know, we really just want to celebrate this community resource. We have been a free resource for people throughout the city for 150 years, which is pretty amazing. It was before we had municipal electricity and municipal water service. Wow. And, you know, we had a small library, and then it became 9 libraries, and soon it will be 10 libraries. And it just shows how important libraries are to Madison and how important information access is.
Yeah. So I hear music. That means that we're coming to the end of a Madison Book Beat. And I want to thank Tana Elias for taking an hour out of her very busy schedule as the new director, or semi-new, director of Madison Public Library, to talk about a key institution of the city and a key part of the lives of many of us, the Madison Public Library. So as we just learned, Madison Library will be for 150 years. That's terrific. Maybe 150 more. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week for Madison Book Beat.
The WORT Board of Directors will hold its regularly scheduled meeting on Wednesday, March 19th at 6 p.m. in person at the station at 118 South Bedford Street. The public is welcome to attend. This meeting is also available virtually via Zoom. For information on how to attend this meeting virtually, please email president@wortfm.org.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and ResTech Services, serving area businesses, nonprofits, and multi-dwelling properties with high-speed, net-neutral internet, digital phone, and television services. On the web at restechservices.net or by phone at 608-663-3868.
And this is 89.9 FM WORT in Madison, WORTFM.org. 3 hours of jazz on All Around Jazz. That's coming up next right after the Insurgent Radio Kiosk.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Monday, March 17th.
This is Helena White reporting from a parallel universe where people are treated humanely, Mother Nature is respected, and governments unite to end the climate crisis. Here's the news from this parallel